This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Hello and welcome to Evenings on FNR. It's a big day of football, obviously Asian Champions League to come with the Melbourne Victory and Sydney FC playing tonight in what is do or die contests for both teams. My name is Nick DiBarno and joining me to my right is Athos Syrianos. It's going to be a massive show today. Athos, good evening.
Good evening, Nick. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's obviously a lot happening at the moment, Athos. As we said, Champions League kicks off at 7:30pm from Sydney at Jubilee Oval between Sydney FC taking on Shanghai SIPG. It is a massive game. I don't want to be the person that always goes on and saying it's must win, but you look at the table and it's almost shaping up to be just like that.
Certainly is. Sydney FC yet to win a game, as is Melbourne Victory. Both sides registered to yet to register victories, though I feel there is a bit of a dichotomy between the two sides at the moment. Melbourne Victory, two big losses. One of them they should have won. They should have won their opening game against Daegu in Melbourne. That was a very bad loss. And Sydney FC, a draw that should have been a win, and they did go down to Kawasaki. So it must win for both teams, absolutely. But I feel as though there is a lot more pressure on Melbourne Victory to get the 3 points. But they face a Herculean task up against one of the best sides in all of Asia, Guangzhou Evergrande, who, as we know, they're a tremendous club and a very difficult team to break down, especially in China.
Let's paint a bit of a picture about Guangzhou. They're coached by Fabio Cannavaro, the former Italian World Cup captain back in 2006. Mm-hmm. They have not conceded a goal in the Chinese Super League this season. Absolutely unbelievable.
After how
defense.
Many games?
Four games. Okay. So quite impressive. But you look at Shanghai SIPG, who are playing Sydney tonight, they've scored 11 and conceded 6. So as you talk about dichotomies and binaries, it's almost a difference between those two Chinese sides. But Melbourne Victory have never won in Asia, as in on the road in Asia, in any of their Asian Champions League campaigns thus far. They've
good
won
time
at
to
home.
Start.
So if you're going to, as I said, if you want to get a big win, doing it on the road in China is the way to do it. But we do know that they have brought a very slender squad, almost minimal numbers. Obviously, three goalkeepers, I believe, have actually been caught up among the 16 players?
16 players, only 14 outfield players. So unless there's an injury to one of the starting goalkeeper, whether it be Matt Acton or Lawrence Thomas, we're not quite sure who that'll be as of yet, but unless one of them goes down, all three substitutes will get a chance to play, as Victory have only named 14 outfield players. Under AFC rules and regulations, you can name a bench as big as 7 players, and Victory have chosen not to do that, surprisingly. After Thierry Antonis went down injured, they've only named the three outfield players for the bench. So a bit of a surprise there. We will chat to the Guardians' Jonathan Howcroft a little later on and what he thinks, why he thinks that is the case, and of course who he thinks is in a better position to perhaps come away with the win tonight.
It's going to be a massive game, and obviously as we talk a bit about Melbourne Victory's players that aren't playing, Ramadak Bari, Birkin Kadar, two senior listed players, not playing.
Dryingham as well.
Dryingham, another one of those fringe players missing out. You would have thought they would have at least brought them on the plane. Considering Ramadak Bari's form at the moment in the NPL has been superb at the moment, big question marks as to why he wasn't selected. Even though some might say, well, why are you going to bring him if he's only going to play 10 minutes? It's just that option off the bench. And considering now the Victory still do have 3 A-League games to go, they'll look to consolidate at least a third spot finish because, you know, I think after their loss on the weekend, second place, he's looking like quite a far-off possibility, barring Sydney FC starting to drop off.
Yeah, you'd hate Melbourne Victory to treat the Champions League like a rubbish uni elective. You want them to go quite seriously here. And if they do lose tonight, it makes it very hard to recover in the Champions League. If your first 3 games are losses, you've only got 3 more to go, a few away games in there too, it becomes very difficult. You have to rely on things not going your way. Does it spell doom for Victory if they lose tonight? Are they out of contention to go through to the next round?
If San Frache beat Daegu and Victory lose, they're 6 points behind second. So
with 3
games, it becomes very difficult. But if Daegu were to win, and it would be actually still, regardless, Guangzhou would be on 6 points, Daegu would be on 9. They have to at least get a point out of this game and hope that Daegu win. That would be almost the best result without actually winning the game. But if the Victory could somehow scrape a 1-0, I think that would be something quite special. And considering now, as we said, look, their top two is going to be quite difficult. Mm-hmm. They should at least, I think, put their eggs in the basket to try and get the win tonight, because they are playing the Mariners on the weekend. No disrespect to Central Coast, but their season's done. They know that they're going to either finish second last.
And they have
last.
A terrible record in Melbourne, too.
Of course. So you think that they should at least go all out, give the likes of Honda, Toivonen and co. the chance to actually do their magic on the field and at least try and get a result for them.
100%. Was it Guangzhou who Victory actually shot out to a 2-0 lead a few years ago?
Yeah, it was. 2-0 back in 2014, they were ahead. And
Lee Broxham scored an absolute banger,
and Pablo
didn't he?
Contreras, he was there for the one season. The Paraguayan centre-back did score that game. They went on to lose 4-2. So if they get out to a 2-0 lead, they'll be hoping that this time they actually keep it, because in the two games they've played so far against Daiga and San Freche, they've been in positions to at least get points. I believe they were leading against Daiga in
Melbourne.
Yeah,
they scored first.
Yeah, they got 1-0.
I don't know, the Brazilian player for Daiga, his name
has
escaped me.
We'll get the fact check on that one.
But he scored, I think, some ripper goals.
And it was 1-1 against San Freche.
Yeah, and San Freche found the winner. Victory equalised in that game too. Of course, if you want to get involved in the discussion, we're discussing Asian Champions League, A-League, NPL, anything you want to talk about, give us a ring, 9944 9999, or let us know via the Facebook comments on the Facebook Live, or tweet us as well. Or put a 03 in front of that phone number if you're calling from outside Victoria as well.
Even if you want to talk a little bit of Champions League from over in Europe, we're always open to talk all things. If you're a Liverpool fan that's up and about after that win against Porto, even a City fan who might be feeling a little bit worried after Tottenham's 1-0 win, we're always willing to talk the beautiful, beautiful game. But as we said, Champions League tonight, we'll have a quick look at Sydney FC before we completely move on from the Melbourne Victory. They are on 1 point at the bottom of their group in Group H, also on top on 4 points, while Shanghai SIPG and Kawasaki Frontale are on 3 points. It shapes up as a massive game against the Shanghai team, as we said, know how to put the ball in the back of the net with the likes of Hulk, Oscar and Alkerson, but defensively have been quite fragile, and Sydney FC have got all the players. CM Diong is set to start his first game since January, and Reza Guzhanishad is also tipped to start this one. So they've got a whole range of attacking talent that should be able to get them, put them in a good position to win.
And they're playing at home too in one of football's many heartlands in Australia at Jubilee Oval.
It's not at the SCG.
And thank God it's not at the SCG, but it's down in Kogarah. And it's a great chance for Sydney FC, a real home ground advantage. If they can get a good crowd to that, that would be sensational. A good chance for Sydney FC. We really need our Australian sides to start winning at home and start creating a fortress around their respective home grounds, because that's not something that we've been able to do. Seeing Melbourne Victory go down in Melbourne, Sydney not able to get that win at home in the opening round of the Champions League. You really have to start winning at home, because winning away is just far too difficult in Asia.
It especially is, and we've seen that a lot with the Australian teams. Teams in the Champions League winning, barring maybe the Western Sydney Wanderers, what they were able to do back in 2014, and some other small examples of teams actually going deep in the Asian Champions League. I believe Adelaide did it back in 2008. Mm-hmm. It's been very rare that we see these sides doing well on the road. And a little bit of a interesting subplot for this one. Shanghai SIPG lost their first game in the Chinese Super League on the weekend, 3-2 to Chongqing Lifan. And one of the goal scorers in that game was a former Sydney FC player, Adrian Mijaevski, who opened the scoring, I believe, in that game. So
a positive omen?
Yeah, it could be a bit of I'm always about omens here, and I think that it definitely goes to show that they are fragile at the back, probably much different to Guangzhou, the Victory are playing, who haven't conceded yet. But just about Shanghai, when they've got the likes of Hulk, Oscar and Alkerson, who are three extremely talented attacking players, two of them being former Brazilian internationals or current Brazilian internationals, whatever which way you want to put it. But they've got that much ability. It's gonna test the likes of Alex Wilkinson, Aaron Calver, Ryan Grant, Michael Zullo to be at their best. They've really got to be alert, because we know if Hulk gets the ball from range, if he finds just a
Hulk
pocket of
smash.
Space, yep, Hulk smash. And Andrew Redmayne's going to be clamoring to try and get his hands on those balls. And it's going to be tough. It's going to be a really tough game for Sydney. But as we said, there are weaknesses. Defence has been almost the Achilles heel of Shanghai SIPG thus far this season.
So what do you tell your players if you're Steve Corica? You've got your focal points, Oscar and Hulk. You know they're going to do a lot of damage. Do you tell those Sydney players to be physical with them?
To chuck a few, get a little bit of biff?
To make it known that they're not going to get an easy run, what do you do? You can't quite do it to a guy like Hulk, who's built like a bar fridge.
You'll bounce off him, mate, if you go to try and give him
exactly.
A shoulder.
So how do you even approach something like that, considering you rarely come up against those world-class players in the A-League?
Well, I think that Oscar obviously is not necessarily, as you said, not the most physically imposing player, so you want to try to get stuck into him. And obviously the likes of Alex Wilkerson, Josh Berlante, Aaron Calver, even Ryan Grant and Zullo for that matter, and guys that aren't afraid to put a bit of a foot in and get stuck in early, I think that that would be a way just to let them know you're there. And I think that this is going to be a game where Sydney just have got to stay strong defensively. But if they get it up the other end, they have to take their chances. This is a game where they have to be clinical. And as we said, they've got the players. You've got a guy who's leading the Golden Boot in the A-League in Adam Lafondra, Reza Guzhanishad, who's an Iranian international, and you've got Ninkovic, CM De Jong, two guys who know how to get it done. If they take their chances, Sydney FC can win this game. And
we say it every week, though.
No, but in all fairness as well, Sydney FC have actually beaten Chinese opposition in Australia. They beat, I believe it was actually Guangzhou Evergrande a couple of years ago when Jackson Martinez was still playing from all those years ago. So goes to show that they've done it here before, but whether they can tonight is a whole other question. But it's going to be interesting because for Sydney, if they don't win, they're also going to be in a bit of a pit to try and get out of.
So who's in a better position at this current stage?
Sydney.
Sydney, you think?
Well, they've got a point. So, of course, they're in a better position. And obviously, as well, top of the table are only on 4 points. Compare that to victory, top of the table on 6. So, you think a win, barring, obviously, a few other things, they could very well be in the top 2 if some results go their way. If all Sonata beat Kawasaki and they beat Shanghai, they're in second. And we're talking heading into the final half of the group stage, saying Sydney FC are in a very good position to go through. And we must remember, though, the big difference between victory and Sydney in the second half of this group stage after tonight is Victory played 2 of their remaining games at home against Guangzhou and against Sanfrecce, while Sydney will have to play 2 of those games on the road against, I believe, Kawasaki. Olsen and Shanghai will actually be the 2 away games, Kawasaki in Sydney. And obviously, as well, this will intertwine with the final series. So it becomes that juggling act of where's your priorities going to lie? If you've got to do that travel overseas, are you going to focus more on the Asian Champions League? Is it going to be more focusing on the A-League finals? Maybe at the moment, because they know where they're more than likely going to finish, they'll be more focused on getting a win now, getting as many points as they can. But when it gets to the nitty-gritty stage, it's going to make things interesting.
But considering this is the 10th season that the A-League's been involved in Asia, it might be even more. I don't think you can really use that excuse anymore, considering Victory and Sydney have been in the Champions League quite a bit. If you're going to pick 2 sides to represent Australia in Asia, I think you'd be looking at Victory and Sydney based on how deep their squads go. So these two teams are seasoned campaigners in Asia. So by now you'd think they should be quite advanced and pretty good at delegating where they're spending a lot of their time.
Of course. But obviously, as we said, their best players, obviously with the Victory more so, with the likes of Honda and Toivonen, have really struggled to be on the field for a consistent amount of time because they've had so many injuries this season. They've missed prolonged periods. So it makes me wonder, you know, are they going to be fit to play 180 minutes over the span of a week? Are they going to be able to front up on the weekend and have the same output after a travel coming back from an overseas flight? So that, and obviously they're aging bodies as well. So you'd think there has to be some sort of rotation. Terry Antonis being out as well is one thing that might just...
We don't have a timeline yet.
Obviously,
with him,
no.
Though,
well,
we
know he's somewhat trained today.
Okay.
I think that the aim would more than likely be to get him fit for the first week of finals. They still do have that midfield depth. You'd think, obviously, Honda would slot in on one side. Cal Valeri, Raul Baena, Josh Hope, those likes will get rotated through. Maybe Lee Broxham might see himself in the midfield 3 at points. So it's all just going to be a matter of not rushing him back and just seeing what happens from there.
I think that name that you mentioned, Carl Valeri, will be big tonight. I think his absence was a big reason as to why Victory experienced a bit of that slump, because they were sort of missing that enforcer in midfield. And I think
just someone to put a bit of a tackle in, you know.
He's not afraid to get a yellow card. And I think he's a bigger body. He can win in the ease. He's a contested player. So if you look at some of the goals Victory have conceded where teams just walked all over them in midfield, I think if he was there, he may have been able to put a foot in and prevent it. So I think he's a very important inclusion for tonight and could be a reason as to if Victory are to potentially get the win, I think he could be a big reason for it.
And he allows him to structure up a little bit better as well, because you got that guy who sits in the middle and it'll probably allow for maybe a bit more of a defensive output. I think if they want to, in particular, just nullify Guangzhou's attacking powers. In particular, when you look at it, they've still, obviously, Raul Baena playing on maybe the right side or whoever it might be alongside Keisuke Honda. You get that bit of balance because Baena's actually surprisingly not bad going forward. I think that's one thing we do underestimate. He's shown a bit when he's actually gone for his day. I remember the game against Newcastle Jets back in January. He hit that little elastico on the wing. Took
he's
on
quite
a player.
Skillful as well.
He's not bad. For a guy that I thought when he's coming in, he's going to be just your defensive midfielder, number six, who's going to sit and just win the ball back. He offers a bit going forward, and having Valeri, who will sit, Boehner and Honda, who will push up and join in the attack, it might just allow for Victory to have a little bit more on the counter-attack. But then you look further up the field, I think with Toivonen and Costa Barbarousis, they can definitely pose a major threat for a Guangzhou team whose defence has been rock solid this season. So big question marks whether they can get the job done, but obviously Toivonen being a guy has been fantastic this year, and Barbarousis scored 14 goals. There's no reason why not.
They're a great partnership, aren't they? The tall and the small striker. It's almost like watching Andy Carroll and Kevin Nolan back in their Newcastle days or back in their West Ham days. I think they complement each other very well, and Costa Barbarousis has been reaping the rewards with the bigger Swede with him.
Exactly right. And look, we're going to now move into our journo segment. We are now joined by Jonathan Howcroft from The Guardian. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good evening.
Good evening, Jonathan. And both Victory and Sydney, of course, take part in the Asian Champions League tonight, and they face similar opponents in terms of quality. Who do you feel is going in more confident?
Well, dear, it's a tough one, isn't it? I don't think either of them really can be that confident. The trip for Victory alone is so daunting, especially coming off what was a treacherous A-League encounter with Sydney FC. Simply because of the result of that big blow, you probably put Sydney FC has been in a stronger headspace. But it's that time in the group stage now where it's just all about results. Doesn't matter about performance, doesn't matter about all of the things that we talk about wanting to give Australian players exposure at the highest level and showing where the A-League rates in terms of its standard of play. It's just they've just got to get results, both of them. And by hook or by crook, that's what this round of matches is all about.
Jonathan, also looking at only in particular Sydney FC, they've obviously got 1 point off the board and they take on this Shanghai team who have all the attacking talent that there could possibly be in this Asian Champions League. But looking at what we were talking about a bit before was their defence is a bit suspect. They've conceded a lot of goals in the Chinese Super League. Do you think Sydney could potentially pose that little bit of a threat because they've beaten Chinese opposition already in Sydney prior to this?
Yeah, I think the difficulty Sydney FC have had so far this season is figuring out that combination in the final third. We know that Adam Lafondre is a proven goal scorer, but there doesn't seem to be the same relationship in the build-up play that they had in those last couple of seasons under Graham Arnold, whether it's where Milos Ninkovic is playing and the form that he's been in. Adrian Mijewski was obviously crucial last season, but it feels like they've not figured out what that settled for is. And we know that Risa is going to be, we've recruited for matches like this in the Asian Champions League. Sim De Jong's got Premier League quality. We've seen little sparks from Anthony Caceres in recent weeks. So it's really, for me, just about figuring out what that combination is and then executing it against very, very dangerous opposition. Like you say, that's probably Shanghai's weakness, but it's all relative, isn't it? There's a weakness at a certain standard, but we still have yet to establish whether the A-League is good enough to capitalise on it.
And as much as, you know, we talk about Sydney FC and the great talent they have, it is very difficult to look past the likes of Hulk and Oscar at the other end of the field. These two players in particular are within their prime and two fantastic world-class players. So, Jonathan, how do you tell your team, how do you prepare your team to come up against world-class players in their prime, something that A-League players perhaps aren't used to?
Yeah, I think the logic would be that you just ignore the reputation and you play them on their merits. They're just number 8 and number 13 and, you know, whatever shirts they happen to be wearing that night. And you do your due diligence during the week. You put in the scouting report. You make sure each player knows what job they've got to do. But you take the star quality out of it. And you accept that both teams are there on an even footing. It's a competition for the best teams in Asia. And Sydney FC are there on merit. So there's no reason that they should feel overawed by it. I guess it's one of those things where at the end of the game, you'd have a bit of a hard heart not to see the players rushing to swap shirts just for the memento of the occasion. But from a pure footballing perspective, you've just got to ignore who's in the shirt and just take them as they come.
And for the team playing later tonight, Jonathan, the Melbourne Victory, they haven't brought an extensive list of players over to China, a very slender list with three goalkeepers. Should we read into the fact they haven't brought a full squad?
I think it's just an indication of how difficult it is to manage two competitions at the stage of the season with an A-League squad. And we've known it for Victory for a long time. They've been incredibly good at creating a very tight first 11 and two or three places outside of that. But they've always, you know, in recent years, struggled to build that squad of 20-ish, which you need at this stage of the season, because you get injuries, you get suspensions. One or two players will lose form. It's just part and parcel of operating a football club. You look at Manchester City, for example, at completely the other end of the scale, and they're going for four trophies at this stage of the season. You look at the players that they've got to just call on, who might not have started for a month or so, or, you know, just been around the fringes of the first team squad, and they're World Cup starting superstars. Victory just don't have that, and the A-League system doesn't allow them to really have that, unless you just have a youth system that's just churning out players year after year after year, and nobody's got that at the moment. So maybe it's an indication that Victory are starting to cut their cloth, and instead of, you know, perhaps rationalising down the champion, their chances in the Champions League as compared to the early finals that are coming up. But I think it's just reality. I think sometimes we just have to accept that teams have to deal the hand that they're dealt with.
So should Melbourne Victory lose tonight, that would be their third successive loss in the Champions League and would make it very difficult to advance through to the next round. And if they don't progress through to the round of 16 of the Champions League, Jonathan, do you feel as though Melbourne Victory would accept it based on what you just said there, or will there be any pressure on anyone around the club?
Yeah, so that is a very, very good question to ask, and a question for Trent Jacobs and Anthony Di Pietro, because for a club of their stature in Australia, their membership, their consistent success over a long period of time, they just have not got the formula right. Whatever it is, over a succession of coaches and squad iterations, they've just consistently fallen short of the mark. Now, whether that's just a consequence of being hamstrung by the domestic conditions, possibly so. The independent A-League will be step one to freeing those domestic obstacles that might be getting in their way. But I think there probably are bigger questions to ask. And yeah, I mentioned one of them in terms of the squad building. But you'd probably have to ask internally where it ranks on their hierarchy. You know, is consistent performance domestically more important? How much would you have to sacrifice to have a fully fit squad in a match like we've got coming up? You know, as you mentioned, it does look like they're managing their squad for this particular match. If you were looking further back and saying, okay, there might be three players who are playing at 80 to 100% loading, would you give them a week off in the A-League knowing that there's a Champions League game coming up? It feels at the moment as if the A-League is still the priority for Australian teams, and it is so competitive that you can't really take your foot off the gas. So it's a very, very difficult situation that Australian teams face at the moment. And Victory, for all their local muscle, they haven't done anywhere near as well as they would have hoped in recent seasons.
And of course, their do or die contest with Guangzhou happening 10 p.m. tonight, Australian Eastern Daylight Time. Looking ahead to the final series, where Melbourne Victory will be involved in massive capacity. As the current table stands, we will see a Melbourne Derby elimination final, most likely played at Amy Park. Despite finishing sixth on the table, Jonathan, is facing Victory a best case scenario for Melbourne City, considering they haven't lost to them yet and they wouldn't have to travel?
Absolutely it is. And if you're Melbourne City right now, you are looking at the remaining fixtures and you're looking at what Victory are doing, and you are, how to put it politely, you would like to hope that that is the outcome. If CT can't get a home final of their own, playing Victory is the next best thing. They match up well against them. It means they don't have to travel. Like you say, it may well end up being at their home ground. So, and they rave. You know, there is a, you know, one of those cliches about clubs raising for derbies. City do that. So, absolutely, that if it meant that finishing sixth was the outcome, then absolutely you would find a way to make that happen, I think.
And Jonathan, that final, if it did take place, we know that Marvel Stadium is all booked out that weekend, so it'll be at Amy Park. What are your thoughts on that? Obviously, we know the atmosphere will be absolutely unreal, but obviously 25,000 fans won't be, extra fans won't be able to attend, obviously, because it's a much smaller capacity. Is that going to, in your opinion, hinder anything?
My kind of default position on this is play football in football-specific grounds. If people miss out, so be it. You can't cater for everybody all the time. And Amy Park is Victory's home ground. I know they have a good, it works out financially them to play at Marvel Stadium when, you know, that 5-game-a-season package that they've got, it makes financial sense. But it just boggles my mind that clubs can have multiple home grounds and choose to take games away from the venues that create the best atmosphere. And a full pumping 30,000 capacity Amy Park will just be the most fantastic spectacle for an A-League final. And if they get, I don't know, 10 or 15 years of consistently filling it at that level, then great, you know, look to move to a bigger venue. But the bigger problem that we have is teams not filling the venues that they've got. So it doesn't concern me in the slightest that for one game that there might be a lockout. And you know, sometimes that drives interest, doesn't it? It increases the level of expectation of the match and that crackle that goes around the ground. So, yeah, I've got no problem with that at all.
And the fact that it would be marketed as a sellout, it can really increase the popularity for the game and the ratings,
totally.
I'm sure. And speaking of teams who in the finals, there are also quite a few that missed out. Of the, let's say, the bottom three, the Mariners, Wanderers and Brisbane, I think next season is what they're really looking towards. Do you see one of those teams or any of those teams doing perhaps what a Wellington did this season and propelling themselves into the top few?
Of the three, there's only the Wanderers, really. I'm enormously concerned about Brisbane. I think they're in a major hole right now. And let's just hope that they have an off-season that rebalances that football club. The Mariners, for all their inability on the pitch, they seem to have a handle on what they're doing. Alan Stadjic is looks like a good appointment. We know Mike Charlesworth and how he runs the club. They are what they are. And the Wanderers, I've been bullish about the Wanderers all season. I thought Marcus Babbel got a raw deal from a lot of people in the first half of the season. They messed up the transition away from Tony Popovic, and he has to be given the opportunity to build a squad that suits the style of play that he wants. And you look at how they've performed in recent weeks and the players that he's brought in the January transfer window, they look a pretty strong squad. They still need to figure out what a settled best 11 looks like and what those fringe squad players who he calls on for those kind of roles. But you look at the talent, particularly in the final third, and they're going to trouble anybody. And once they're in that local football-specific stadium and they get the crowd behind them and hopefully a few early results to get a bit of momentum, that will be the best ticket in town again. And with a team that I think could go places. So, yeah, long-winded answer to your question. I think the Wanderers would be the team that fits that brief.
Well, Jonathan, thank you very much for joining us once again here on a Wednesday for the Journos program. We'll speak to you again next week.
Thank you very much.
That was Jonathan Howcroft from The Guardian joining us just then, just to talk all the pressing matters in Australian football, especially looking ahead to the Champions League. And a very interesting discussion raised about the bottom three teams and one team potentially getting in. I have to agree with Jonathan wholeheartedly. I don't think that anyone else barring the Western Sydney Wanderers will be making that jump next season.
Well, they sort of have to, don't they, considering they've built up this new stadium for 3 years, and the build-up is just wait till we get into the new stadium, wait until we get to the new stadium and all will be resolved. So they sort of have to get back up there, and I don't see why they can't. They've in particular, the signing of Mitchell Duke, I think, it goes fantastic, very underrated player. When we talk about some of the great imports in the A-League.
Do you call him an import, though, or just a return?
Not an import, but a return. Yeah. He's been brought into the A-League because he wasn't a big-name signing and he came to a real struggling club that couldn't really go anywhere. I think that's probably why we don't talk about it as much. But he has been sensational on return. He's almost single-handedly got the Wanderers back into mathematical finals contention. They can't quite make it now, but he did sign on an 18-month contract, so we're not quite sure what the future holds for him. But him and Oriol Riera, I think, pose a dynamic duo up front. They work well together.
That's if Oriol Riera is there next season.
Well, that's if Mitchell Duke's there too. He only signed for an 18-month
deal. Well, he's still got a year left on his contract for next season, so I think that he will be there next season regardless. And I think the Wanderers would do a lot to make sure he is there. Looking at players that won't be there next season, Josh Risden, who is one in particular, who is obviously off to Western United. Mark Bridge announced his retirement. We haven't seen much of Patrick Ziegler. I don't know whether he'll still be there next season as one of their overseas players. Raul Llorente has been in and out of the team this year. But I think that the big focus, and another one as well, is Alexander Balmuhan, who's apparently courted by a few A-League clubs, and I heard a rumour as well, Western United potentially looking at him as well.
They'll be linked to everyone.
They will, but he's obviously out of contract at the moment. Don't know whether he will be there. Looking at this, I think that they're going to have to make sure they continue with those young guys playing every week, the likes of Russell, Moutoukoutis, Keanu Backus, even Abraham Ajok, etc., even bringing through the guys like John Roberts and a few of the other young guys who I think are going to start to take the next step. I'd like to see more of them next season. I think they're going to have to build a midfield, though. That's where they have fallen apart a lot. Keanu Backus, I think, is a fantastic player. We haven't seen necessarily the same output from the likes of Rashid Mahazi and Jordan O'Doherty. O'Doherty obviously suffering an injury, but I think
he'll be back next season, O'Doherty. Preseason.
But he'll probably enter preseason still injured. I think he did his ACL, so he's out for quite some time. So they're going to have to go into the transfer market and look to bring in some young midfielders and look to try and start again with some of these young guys. And even looking overseas for some players who Marcus Babbel will be able to finally pick his own squad. I think that's the one thing we've got to remember. He will pick his own squad next season and will look to build with that. I think as well in defence, at his centre-backs, he probably needs to maybe get one or two more players in, because I think playing Tarik Alrich in the heart of defence, that's not his natural role. I think they need to get a proper big centre-back, which will allow for Alrich to play as a fullback, which is his most comfortable position. He's done admirably well this season, but undersized, playing up against bigger strikers, I think he gets worked out a little bit. And then further up the ground, as we said, if they can keep Oriol Riera, have Mitchell Duke, Rolly Bonavazzi as well comes in and out of games. He shows glimpses of what he can do. Kwame Yeboah, they've got attacking players to do it. It's just in the midfield and further back, which they've got to work out first.
And I think what the Wanderers have worked out is in the A-League in particular, because we have the salary cap and limited numbers of players on a list, it actually takes a few years to get to a grand final or even win a championship. You can't just win it overnight by bringing in a few players.
Yeah, and we've had a Wanderers fan come through in the comments in John, and John has said, we haven't been the same since big Dino Kressinger left. And that was back in 2012, their famous first season where they made it all the way to the top. Big Dino, I think, only scored two goals and scored that goal in the final series, that back heel. They haven't, look, they've had Tommy Juric and stuff come through. They've had some strikers. They've had a bit of time where they've made grand finals. Well, Piovacardi was... we're not going to go into Federico Piovacardi, but they had guys there that they were fine in the back of the net, but it seems like, in a way as well, their top goal scorers sometimes were Mark Bridge, who was playing more as a winger. They haven't had that consistent striker for a period of time, and in particular with the Wanderers, the one thing that's almost overshadowed them throughout this whole time is getting there but not finishing the job. They get to the grand final, don't finish the job. For three grand finals, they won the Asian Champions League, and recently Is this now going to be a second season now in a row without finals, which I think is quite disappointing for a team that has basically made the finals every season before that?
And I think what's good about this second half of the season is we've seen Marcus Babel look to build a core, look to build a strong core of players. He's brought in a lot of these youth players, as you mentioned, and whether the likes of Riera and Duke stay on, I think if they do stay, they'll be fantastic additions to that team. But we see that Marcus Babel is working towards something. I think you have to give him a bit of time. You have to give foreign managers a bit of time in the A-League to really understand what's going on. We are a very unique competition here. We are very different to other leagues in Europe and even in Asia. So I think he's the right man to lead the final, the Wanderers back to the top. And it's a very exciting season next year. It's almost
Western United coming in as well.
It's almost do or die for the Wanderers next season. New stadium. I think they really have to make a strong impression right from the start.
Yeah, I think that that's going to be a big part of it because you want to make sure that you're out there getting wins early at the new stadium. Make that the proverbial fortress. Make sure you're a very hard team to beat there. Very similar to what they had at Pirtek before they were moved, before obviously the renovations happens there. I think as well, just making sure that they can just start to get those wins, as we said, making sure they get those wins early. But plus also, I think with Western Sydney, it's just been a weird few years where they've just been in a bit of limbo, like not knowing that their home grounds have been at like three different grounds of like Spotless Stadium, which was considered basically a graveyard by even players that play for the GWS Giants in the AFL. It's just not a very good ground. So I think that if the Wanderers next year can get back up, which I think they will, it's going to make for a very interesting competition because when the Wanderers are performing, the crowd's getting involved and makes those games almost must-see, whether you're there or even watching on TV.
And if you were to pick out the iconic Western Sydney moments, you wouldn't have picked anything over these last few years, I don't think.
No, I think that if you're going to go anything iconic, I think the most iconic moment that's happened during them was when Kieran Bullock scored the goal. He was offside and he ran into the crowd and celebrated. Look, tell you a little bit, just a little side note about Kieran Bullock. He's actually without a club. Maybe he could potentially dip back into the A-League. No, he's actually got a ban at the moment, but if he can overturn that ban, which he's apparently working hard to do, maybe we'll see him back in the A-League next season.
Perhaps. And Western United, we've mentioned them a few times tonight. They've signed 7 or 8 players. They're about to sign a lot more in a very exciting off-season to come for them. One of the players they have signed is young Apostolos Stamatolopoulos.
Yes.
Now, he scored a brace on the weekend, got a red card, and according to Marco Kurz and Val Miliaccia from the Advertiser, he's hosting a barbecue to make up for his sending off in the 46th minute of their win. At just 19 years old, Nick, I think he could be a breakout player next season. Not putting too much hype or pressure on him, but I think if he's given the opportunity at Western United to play just about every week and be a focal point for them, I really think that he can be the next big exciting thing in the A-League.
Well, he's had probably the most eventful 45 minutes that we've ever seen in probably A-League history, or probably not A-League history, but maybe in like the last, easily in the last season. You know, when you're scoring a double and getting a red card in the same half, it does say something. But talking about how exciting he is, there's no reason why not. I believe that he's really the only proper number 9 that Western United actually have at the moment. Valentino Yule's more of a winger. So I think that if they were looking to build just around him and have those wingers, those guys, the supporting act, and maybe get a few young strikers around him.
I'm sure they'll bring in a big-name striker or an experienced striker.
Maybe a Tommy Urich or something. Maybe. Could be someone. But I think that if they have Apostolos as one of those main men who they build up to and look to try and get him into that system, and once he matures and gets going, he could be a fantastic player. He's got all the tools.
He does have all the tools. And as we've read, And as we saw, he's not afraid to go in hard, which I think for a young player is an amazing feat. I'd say that it was just adrenaline that led to that red card. He just scored his second goal, and you wouldn't normally go in like that 3-0 up right at half time. So I think it might have just been a bit too much adrenaline, but I think he's a very exciting player. And good to say that Marco Kurz is persisting with him, and he has big plans for
him. Well, he hasn't really got anyone else at the moment. That's the thing as well.
But we've seen that when players have generally signed for another club the next season, that maybe managers are a bit reluctant to play them.
Like Aaron Calver's still playing at the moment for Sydney FC, so that's a good sign.
True, but it looks as though Marco Kurz has Stamatolopoulos in his sights for the final series.
I think he's
looking to almost build the final series around him and use him as the main man.
He wants to go out with a bang. He wants to go deep in this final series. They've got 3 big games now to end the year against Melbourne City, the Victory, and Brisbane Roar. They want a home final. Because
they can still finish fourth.
Yes, they are only goal difference behind Wellington. That was a very important win. And if they can get a win against Melbourne City, it will mathematically put them in the final series. So you see 1 more point, basically, just to make them
safe regardless.
Let's just talk hypotheticals here. Because obviously
they're not going to drop out.
They're not going to drop out, but barring the absolute miracle that something drastic happens and Adelaide dropped out. But in that same sense, they've won their last two games and they've got that confidence back after that little period where they weren't scoring. And it was a much-needed win against a very much in-form Wellington Phoenix outfit. Mm. So I think that if they can get a win against Melbourne City on the road this week, it would go a long way. Wellington will be playing, I believe they've actually got the Brisbane Roar away, but they do play Melbourne City and Perth Glory in their last two games. Two games they could very well drop. And I believe both of those games might be on. No, one of those games are
they're
at home.
They're playing City at home.
City at home, but the other two are on the road. Adelaide, though, have the original derby against Melbourne Victory at home, which will be equally as important for Melbourne Victory because they're 4 points behind Sydney. But as we know, Sydney derbies could potentially swing. We know Sydney have dominated the derby, but if the West Sydney's got nothing more to play for than pride at the moment, and those young kids will want to end this season on the highest note possible and potentially play spoiler. And looking at the remaining three games early in that race for second, Victory coming up as well against Adelaide and Western Sydney after they play the Mariners. But Sydney FC have a trip against Perth Glory next week after Western Sydney and then an away game against Newcastle.
Do you reckon they'll call a truce, Sydney and Perth? They say, okay, Perth, you can probably finish first. We'll finish second. Let's
Perth,
call a truce.
Perth are one win away from basically sealing top spot because they've got a 13-goal gap on Sydney FC plus 6 points. So Sydney's maximum points is 57. Mm. And I think Perth winning, they've got it. And Perth Glory this weekend, they will play the Newcastle Jets at home, who at the moment are basically out of the finals hunts. They're 7 points behind Melbourne City with three games to go. If they win and
they
Adelaide
need to win
wins,
all three and City need to lose all three.
Yeah, City, the wheels need to fall off and fall off fast. If Newcastle want any chance, they were very lucky to beat the Wanderers on the weekend.
Let's just talk about Melbourne City for a second. They play Wellington and Adelaide, the first one against Adelaide this week in Melbourne, who I think they drew or they beat last time. Oh, actually, they drew Jamie McLaren's first game. We might need to fact check that. Yeah. If you know Melbourne City fans, let us know. But
Against Adelaide? Yeah, it was a 1-1 draw.
Jordy
yeah.
Thomason's first game too for Adelaide, a fun fact.
Complete difference to Jamie McLaren. Well, yeah. Ying and yang.
But City play Adelaide and Wellington in these next 2 weeks, the two sides that are around them. So, potentially, two wins for City and you get a home final in fourth.
That's pretty decent. That's two home finals in Melbourne.
Two six-point matches back-to-back.
But also, as well, in the final series, it could very well be the two elimination finals are both in Melbourne. So, Amy Park is going to be in...
That would cause some headaches.
It's going to be in a bit of... It's going to go to overdrive. I don't think we've ever seen two semi-finals.
No, we haven't.
Really very rarely have two A-League games in Melbourne on the same weekend.
Or two A-League finals in the same city for that.
I would like a bit of a fact check on that one, actually. If there's ever been two Melbourne games in the same weekend, Victory and City both playing home games on the same weekend, we'd love to...
There have been throughout the season, absolutely. Double headers. Yeah. I've been to both in the same weekend.
Okay, so there's probably been the couple, but in the final series, I don't
not
think
in the finals,
never
no.
Happened.
And not They're at Amy Melbourne Park, Darby's. Too. Not at Amy Park, too. And as we know, the AFL has Marvel Stadium booked out Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Very rare that happens.
Quite a coinkydink there that they booked it the first week of the finals.
You think that there was a bit of planning?
Oh, for sure. And now, Victory at City at Amy Park, or Victory against whoever at Amy Park would be a massive contest in the opening final.
Basically, in that logic, it would probably mean that Victory and City would more than likely be playing, if they say that happened to be against
Friday,
Wellington,
Sunday,
and Adelaide United, respectively. Friday, maybe Saturday, Sunday. But what if, obviously, as well, the big thing as well is got to remember, if Perth Glory do play a semi-final, they will get the week off. Mm. Do you think that they'll play their first home final at Optus Stadium? Or will they play that at HBF Park? Because we must remember one thing in particular, that Tony Pignata said they will play their grand final at Optus Stadium, but obviously I doubt that they play the semi there. But there's obviously there's that chance. And
I think the semi has to go to HBF Park. I think it has to go there.
Optus Stadium is in use on the Sunday of that weekend. Fremantle Dockers are playing, but that I don't think that would clash at all with if whether they play on the Saturday, but it have to be a question have to be asked. It still has to be raised that it could potentially happen.
And we know the A-League Grand Final is traditionally on a Sunday. It's the Sunday 5 o'clock start.
And the AFL have been quite kind, allowing for that sort of that. If the A-League Grand Final was to be hosted in Melbourne, that Marvel Stadium would be able to be used. So I think
there you
nice
go
little...
too. But I think should Perth Perth will host a home final. They can't drop below second. So I think it has to be there at NIB Stadium. I think if they can pack it out and break records there, it'd be fantastic.
Well, we've had a very trusty fact check come through, Mr. Josh Parrish, who has said that City and Victory played elimination finals last season in the same weekend. They did the first week, City versus Brisbane Roar and Victory versus Adelaide.
There you go.
There we go. So it was right in front of us the whole time. And
last season as well.
Well, there you go. Not much goes between the years for us too. But anyways, but look, in all fairness, it's going to be interesting to see how it all pans out. 2 years in a row with two Melbourne finals in the same
potentially.
Weekend.
Potentially. They're not quite there yet. But are you confident for Melbourne City that they can finish higher than sixth?
No.
You don't think?
No. I'm not. I don't want to be that guy, but I have to be in a way. I think I think it'll be sixth or fifth for them. They're not going to get a home final for me.
I think they can beat Adelaide this weekend.
Yeah, but I think that Wellington aren't going to drop enough points. I can't see Melbourne City beating Wellington in Wellington.
In Wellington. Well, Wellington,
that's
Phoenix,
what's going to come down
they
to.
They were very uncharacteristic last time out, weren't they, against Adelaide United? And even with Roy Krishna back in the side, they struggled to find the back of the net.
And I think that was just that's their first bad game in months, in weeks.
So is that it is, just a bad game?
I think they haven't lost a game like that since the start of February when they lost against Perth on the road. And they've had games where they lost 1-0 against Sydney FC at home, but since then they've been flawless. They won 8-2, they won 3-1, they won 4-1. I know they were against teams that were in the bottom bit, but they were still scoring goals. They got Brisbane away this weekend, and there's no reason why they can't give them a hiding and really make up for that. Because I think if Wellington basically win this week, I think that it's all, barring if Melbourne City obviously win as well, they should have fourth spot wrapped up. But then again, though, we must remember, it also depends on what Perth Glory team gets put out in that final game against Wellington, because Perth might be thinking, we're going to go in. Well, if they've got first spot wrapped up.
But they've got the week off in the first week of the finals.
But why would you even bother? If you've got first spot wrapped up, if you've got first spot wrapped up and you've got a week, I know you've got the week off as well, but why would you even bother? If you've got sore bodies, Chris Economides, for instance, at the moment is carrying an injury, you wouldn't rush him back.
But you're not going to do a Fremantle Dockers and rest half your squad.
No, but you'd rest some of your older bodies, like your Diego Castros and stuff. You would give them the week off, and you'd play your Jacob Italianos and some of those younger guys in that game.
I think...
And Tony Popovich is known for his mass rotations.
You've got the first week off, though, of the finals. I think it would be a very risky move to give your players 2 weeks break. I think it should just be business as usual. If players are sore,
that's what I'm saying. If they're sore, you don't play them.
If they're sore, you'd rest them now. I think you'd be resting those players now.
Perth still need to lock up first spot.
But if you're not going to put out an unfit team even now, you're not going to put out an unfit team at any stage of the season, unless of course you're Melbourne City. And
but all I'm saying is, historically, Tony Popovich is known for his mass rotations. We know he's done it all season. Don't be surprised if in that last game, obviously I know he's got the extra week off, you want them to be still fit, but if you've got those sore bodies, you're not going to risk them. And if you are going to risk them, there could be serious repercussions. I'm just saying, what I would do is, even if you play them for 50 minutes, they can't play that full 90 that game if they're sore.
Would you rest fully fit players in
Depends
that last
Depends which
week?
Fully fit players, though. Like, give me an example.
Say if Shane Lowry is fully fit, he's 100% fit.
I'd play him for 60 minutes.
I reckon you got to give him the full game. And then he's got that whole...
But then again, that's a centre-back. Like, centre-backs are much more durable. They don't cover the same distance that, say, Neil Kilkenny will cover. Neil Kilkenny's an older body. I'd give him a rest. I'd give him the week off.
So you'd give Neil Kilkenny 2 weeks off before
even
the
if
first
it wasn't,
final?
Even if it's not the full game, even if he doesn't get a full rest, at least he only plays 60 minutes. And you play a guy like Jake Brimmer.
I think it's business as usual for Perth Glory. And if the players are fully fit, you've got
to I'm just saying, that's what Popper tends to do. He likes his mass rotations.
Well, it remains to be seen. Perth Glory are in rarefied air. They're on top of the table the first time they've done so. They were on top of the table a few seasons ago, but the halfway point of the season, but then that
salary cap
breach.
Scandal, yeah.
Which, and they had a good side that season, and Victory went on to win the
that
championship.
That was when Andy Carrick first went to Perth Glory. That was Kenny Lowe era.
And who knows, had Perth Glory not breached the salary cap, they could have actually done not bad that season, but I think Victory were the best side that year.
Well, if they hadn't breached the salary cap, I don't think all those players would have been playing. But anyways, we're not one to speculate.
No.
But looking at really that table, how we see it all going, I honestly think the way it's going to end up, if I was to pick my elimination finals, I honestly think that we're going to be getting Melbourne Victory. More than likely, we'll be either playing Adelaide or Melbourne City. And obviously, I think it's going to be a massive first final for the Victory anyway. It's going to take a miracle for Victory, I think, for me to get back into second. I don't think Sydney's going to drop enough points unless they lose against Perth and then sets up a frenetic final week where Sydney are hanging on. They're playing a Newcastle Jets team that might want to get
Playing the Jets away too.
And the Jets have historically played very well against Sydney. And, you know, if Newcastle somehow are still in the finals hunt come the last game of the season, they might be playing with a big crowd and a bit of a wet sail. So, obviously, got to keep all those possibilities up and all those mathematicians potentially there.
That is right. And just on the Newcastle Jets, given the start of the season where they struggled to put a team out there, how have you rated the rest of their season?
Well, they got back in a really good position and then they completely stuffed it up when they lost against the Mariners. That game, they could not afford that was just a complete disaster. Now, we know the Mariners were playing with all the momentum in the world.
With a new coach.
New coach. And obviously when the new coach comes in, just seems like every team sparks up. But the last 3 weeks, they haven't been convincing. Two losses, even that loss against Wellington. Last week, they were very lucky to beat the Wanderers. I just think that they've done well enough for what they can, but they had a very good chance to get back in there. They beat the Victory. They were getting points against good sides, but if they'd beaten the Mariners, they probably would have actually been within, I think, a point. So they actually might have actually gotten inside the six. And now it's almost been too late because Adelaide have started winning. City started getting some results as well. And the pressure's on them again. And it's seeming like it's just too little too late. And the game against Perth away, I think Perth will put them down. And that will be the end of Ernie Merrick's almost basically resigned to a season without finals. And it's a real shame for Newcastle considering they hosted the grand final last year. But having the Roy O'Donovan suspension, all those injuries.
And
as well.
Joey Champiners as well. They were playing without a striker for so long. Jair took a bit of time to get used to the A-League. Disappointing for the Jets, they're considering what they did last season. Nick, is it true, though, that you and Josh Parrish, one of our other presenters, have a bet going? You were confident that the Jets would make the finals. So you said to Josh, I'll shout you lunch if the Jets make the finals.
Yeah, so I said...
Or you have to shout me lunch if the Jets make the finals.
Well, it was sort of like at a stage where Newcastle were about three games outside the six. And I said to Josh, all right, we'll go to the Chinese place next door. You shout
Which is shut down.
Which has been shut disappointingly. Down. Closed until the start of end of March. And it's now April. I'm looking at you guys. All fairness... No, it was, I get fried rice if Newcastle make it, or I'll shout Josh to one of those little Chinese burgers, the $4 Bao burgers, which is, mind you, absolutely sublime. And in the end, well, the restaurant's closed down, so nobody wins. The bet at the moment might have to be moved to another Chinese restaurant, which might put me even more out of pocket. But anyways, it's not over yet.
It is.
It's mathematically, it's not over yet.
I think the fat lady is starting to warm up her pipes, though.
It's not over yet. I am a Wigan supporter. And I know you always say, you always talk about Wigan, Italy, AC Milan. Yeah. But Wigan did it. They've come back from incredible deficits.
They did.
So for me, it's not over until it is mathematically impossible. And if the Jets win this weekend and Melbourne City loses against Adelaide, they're only 4 points outside with two games left.
Could you imagine? Newcastle
play Brisbane Roar. Newcastle beats Brisbane Roar. Wellington beats Melbourne City. They're 1 point outside heading into the final week. And Melbourne City will take on in that final game the Central Coast Mariners at home. And I think that that's when it'll come to a heartbreaking end.
I've almost gone and bought a Newcastle Jets membership after that inspirational spiel. That was excellent.
Josh Parrish has come through saying, the fried rice is mine. It's over, mate. No, Josh, it is not over yet.
It's over. Of course, we must continue our discussion on the A-League, and it is another big week coming up, Nick. Yeah. And as we saw, quite a big day actually today in Sydney. The SCG was copping a lot of flak, but a few kilometres down, or actually right next door, the Moore Park Stadium, the Allianz Stadium, was knocked down. That, of course, will be redeveloped in 3 years' time. Some of the comments were that the stadium's never looked better. A nice little cheeky jab there. But that is, I think, I did go to watch one of the grand finals there, and it's a very nice stadium to watch football from.
It's just a bit old.
A purpose-built stadium, 40,000, and you just can't wait for it to be rebuilt.
Yeah, but it needs to be. I think it was just gotten too old. It looked really just... Not shabby. It didn't look nice. And I think that it was time for it to have that redeveloped. Considering what Western Sydney were doing just up the road, I think that Sydney FC will be hoping to get back in there sooner rather than later, though, because they won't want to have this jumping around. Just touching on the SCG quickly, I know I've spoken so much about it, but it's just a shame how it came to that.
It came down, yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't just affect the A-League. It affects any sport played there. And how a ground in any professional competition can be kept like that, full stop, is unbelievable. How can that even happen? So for me personally, it's just, it baffles me. And I know I haven't had a chance to weigh in on it too much because I haven't been on. So it gives me that chance mm-hmm. now to just say what I have to say.
There you go. And I'd like to see Sydney really playing out of those suburban grounds next season. Leichhardt Oval, Jubilee Oval, they're all great grounds. One of the exciting stories to come out of tonight, though, and was featured in a number of articles, was the fact that Elvis Kamsoba will be, in the space of 18 months, having gone from Avondale, will now be playing against the likes of Paulinho in China, and probably one of the biggest games of his career to date. And it's just a fantastic story that someone who was playing in Avondale only a few months ago is now coming up against one of Asia's best.
Well, yeah, he's coming up against a guy that was just playing at the World Cup back in June. So it's going to be interesting to see how Elvis goes tonight. He's had quite a good little stint at the Melbourne Victory. I think I'd like to see him continue that form heading into next season with a full preseason in a professional environment, moving. But taking that move, it's hard to come in January, especially for the NPL, and have that instant impact. I think, though, he has done commendably well, and I think that next season he could take that to another level. He's still a young guy as well, we must remember.
That he is. And are there any other NPL players who you would like to see in the A-League? I'd love to see, I know, Brandon Barnes, for sure.
Yeah, well, Brandon Barnes is one. But then again, you have to remember, Brandon Barnes is the typical, he's the guy that has the visa. That you have to remember, he takes the visa
what
spot.
What about Alejandro Sanchez,
yes. Though, that guy's an absolute talent. I must remember,
he should be in the A-League, right?
Alejandro Sanchez, yeah, he was playing in the La Liga not long ago. So it goes to show, I said in an article, if you want to head over to the FNR website and do a bit of scrolling through the article, I did about five players the Wanderers, the Western United should sign, sorry. And one was Alejandro Sanchez. He was actually at a trial at Sydney FC at the start of the season when Trent Bahadur went down. So if I was Western United, they've only signed the one international player so far. Or I believe maybe too soon, they might have a second player coming through. But if they get that third player in or want to get a visa player, Alejandro Sanchez would fit under the salary cap, and I think he'd be a fantastic player to bring in. He's about 29 years old as well, so he's not necessarily over the hill. He's in his prime, and he's scoring goals for fun in NPL New South Wales. Mm. So I think that they could definitely make a move for him. But other players, it's tough. Valentino Yula would have said 3 weeks ago before he signed for Western United, I thought he's been absolutely fantastic. I'd like to see Joey Caterbarn get another crack. Yeah, okay. Him and Liam Boland both get picked up from Avondale, because I think Avondale is just a factory of superb football players, mm-hmm. and they've got so many of them.
Well, they're on top by quite a significant margin in NPL Victoria.
The other one is Jerry Siliotis from Melbourne, South Melbourne. I think he's a really good young talent. I've been very impressed with his performances so far this season since moving from Northcote. And I think there's a whole range of players. If you go through almost every NPL club throughout the whole country, you could probably name at least one or two that would almost be ready to make that jump. Obviously, Matt Miller in particular is one that has made the
best. Who's impressed you most of the NPL players that made the move to the A-League? Would it be Matt Miller?
He's had, as a right back, and you get the most assists in the NPL or the A-League. That is absolutely unbelievable. And he's going to go to the Jets next season.
Would he be in contention for one of Central Coast's best and for the best and fairest?
He will be the best and fairest. He's been their best player this year. I can't think of anyone else that's been better than him this season.
And it's just awkward that he's moving to the Jets. That's the only thing.
It's a bit of almost a slap across the face in a way. No wonder at the time Mike Mulvey wasn't too happy about it. But end of the day, though, he's a guy that he isn't just a right back. You could almost play him up on the wing as well.
He's contributed to quite a few goals as well.
And if Daniel Georgievski does move on at the end of the season at Newcastle, you've got a like-for-like player coming right in who will offer you that same attacking output. He's a fantastic player in all facets. He's been one of those guys that's really, really impressed me. I think this year's almost been the season of just NPL talents making that next step and really impressive. Even Max Burgess as well. Yeah. It's been fantastic.
Well, there was that one game when Victory hosted Newcastle where you had Elvis Kamsoba, Kenny Atiu, and Liam Boland.
Kane Shepherd.
Getting ahead of myself. But Kane Shepherd on the field all at the same time, with two of whom were Avondale players. But I thought that was a special moment. Just shifting your attention over to NPL New South Wales, Nick, and that competition is probably one of the tightest leagues we have in Australia. You've got after five games, every team in the league has won. So it's already quite competitive. On top sit Wollongong Wolves, who traditionally has been one of the biggest clubs in Australia. Yep. And after a pretty poor season last year, I think they're off to a really good start. The likes of Apia are up there. Manly are back up there after a poor season. Defending the championship there, that they failed to make the finals. And it's actually quite tight. You've got three teams on 7 points, quite a few on six. And it's shaping up to be a really tight competition, and we do look forward to covering that over the next few months.
And Josh has just come through on our socials and said he wants to see Thomas James from Wollongong make that next move up to the A-League. Potentially could be a target of a Southwest Sydney MacArthur for two seasons' time, might be even a target for some of those other A-League clubs, the Central Coast Mariners or someone like that. So I think that there'll be definitely some of those NPL players in the shop window for some of those expansion teams, but also for teams just looking to restock.
There you go. And Thomas James is also British as well, so there is that question mark. He did come from Canberra in the ACT. So, again, it's a shame that there's that risk at play too, but we do want to see those players who are capable of playing in the A-League are given that opportunity.
Yeah, it's going to be big to see what happens next year, obviously, as we head in towards the end of the A-League season. 3 weeks to go. Permutations still around over who's going to host finals.
Well, we've got Newcastle just finishing the top four, Jets, according to you.
Nah, well, the Jets can only finish, well, they can actually finish fourth, technically, but, you know, that's, as we said, massive train wreck needs to happen. But, Athos, it's time for us to go here on Evenings on FNR. If you missed any of the show, head over to our SoundCloud, even get back on the Facebook, start it from the start, watch our Facebook Live. And we'll be back again from 5 p.m. tomorrow. It'll be George Aniki and Louise Taffer taking you through Evenings on FNR. My name is Victor Barno. Joining me, Athos Syrianos. And it's goodbye for now.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.